I'm John, he's Patrick. So,
the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Okay. And since we've no place to go, don't let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. And it doesn't show signs of stopping. And I bought some corn for popping.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds. And this is episode number 216 for real this time.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude, a Hugo award-winning podcast dude for the SF Signal podcast. You can check out his stuff over at atfmb.com and at atfmb on Twitter. My name is John Anelio. You can check out what I do, which is mostly music, over at my website, johnanelio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio. And today we are joined by Sam Sykes. Now, normally this would be the point in the show where I'm introducing our guest, and I usually will sort of take a bio from their website and read a little bit about that. But I think you really have to go to Sam's website yourself and read his bio, because it talks a lot about wrestling Kodiak bears and mm-hmm. defeating prime ministers yep. and things like that. So me reading that you're going to lose a lot of the effect of it. But Sam is an author. He's got his first book was Tome of the Undergates, and he has a trilogy out through Pyre, and he's got a new book out called The City Stained Red, and that's out through Orbit. And you could pick that up at your local bookstores and online and all that kind of stuff. And Sam, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And Sam, yeah. don't you hold a record for selling the most books at Dragon Con?
Yeah. Well, probably not, because like Brandon Sanderson has been at Dragon Con too, so I would guess that he did quite a bit.
I just remember there was one day where a bunch of you were together and you had like a little contest or something, and I remember seeing that you had won that.
Yeah, I was there with the Pyre mm-hmm. crew. We were at Dragon Con and we were selling books out of our booth. And, my natural fear.
You crushed it. Yeah.
Yeah, my natural fear of failure drove me to
crush it. Just
aggressively sell all my books until they were all gone.
Nice. Well, so you just have to just aggressively tell people how good your book are. Do you do that at random bookstores too? Do you go to random bookstores and threaten people to buy your book?
No. I mean, these days, most of my self-promotion is based on describing nightmare scenarios in Twitter and suggesting that they can be avoided if you buy my book.
It's an effective strategy.
I am shocked that it works as well as it does.
That's good.
People are pretty terrified of me showing up in their dreams.
Just on an unrelated note, because right when we were about to start the pod, we had like a little bit of a misfire when we went to start. Patrick started thinking that this was a different podcast, and from the other room, you might hear my son watching the Superhero Squad on Netflix right now. So I don't know if you guys have watched the Superhero Squad, which is basically the Marvel superheroes, but you know, kind of for little kids, and it is very silly. And the song is by the Nerf Herder guy. It's very good. But anyway, that's that's that. But all right. Well, you know what? Let's, you know, why don't we move right into our picks of the week?
Picks of the week.
And Sam, why don't you go first if you have a pick ready?
I'm not quite sure if it's available yet, but I have just finished Brian Staveley's Providence of Fire. This is the second book in his trilogy of The Unhewn Throne. Mm-hmm. And the first book was The Emperor's Blades, which was, I wound up in really being surprised by that book. Back when it first came out, it was sort of being marketed as the new fantasy of that year. And, you know, I generally don't buy into that. There have been plenty of the new fantasies that I haven't really enjoyed, so I picked it up on a whim, not really expecting to like it, and I really did. And, mm-hmm. you know, I actively threatened people to get a hold of Providence of Fire in ARC form, and I just finished it, and it's really good.
Yeah, I loved book one in that series, and I was actually at I think it was probably my favorite fantasy book of that year. And I was at an event in New York talking to some folks, publicists and things like that. And we were all talking about that book because, I mean, I guess, as you said, it was sort of, it had a lot of publicity coming out of the gates and probably didn't do as well as they would have hoped it would have done considering the hype it had. And I don't know what the sales of it were, but we were all talking about how we all loved it. And we would like to see it do better. And hopefully with book two, it will reach a little bit of a bigger audience because I loved book one. I have the arc of book two sitting here yet. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm looking forward to reading it. And we had Brian on the show too, and he's a real, real smart, cool guy, and I'd like to see him do well with that. So I even though I haven't read that book yet, I did read book one, and I loved book one. So I'm now, I know when we talked to him about it, in book two, I know it's supposed to be the viewpoint characters shift a little bit. And what was the sister's name in that book? I'm blanking on this. Air. Yeah, does she have a bigger role in book two?
She does. And that was my main criticism with book one, is that while the brothers had a lot going on, Adair did not so much. And that was kind of grating. But especially since I found her perspective and her conflict to be the most interesting. Mm-hmm. But this time she has a lot more going on, and it's actually pretty cool the way her arc takes her from sort of a rebel to a leader, and I really like seeing her grow into that. And one thing I really appreciate about this book is that it avoids the middle book syndrome of sort of just treading water until the third book.
Mm-hmm.
Like every second book needs to raise the stakes more. Mm-hmm. And this one definitely does that. So
cool.
I was very pleased with it.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that one too, so I will back that pick up. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick is going to be the DVD or Blu-ray version of The Legend of Korra Book 3, Changes. Mm. This was the season of Korra that vanished from television, from Netflix, or not Netflix, from Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. Because they found that there was more people were watching it either online or on DVR than were watching it live, and so they figured it just made more sense to push it directly to Nickelodeon.com and have people streaming it there. And so I didn't realize that. All I knew was it was gone.
Yeah.
And I thought that they were doing their thing where they take like a little break. You know, sometimes they'll show some episodes and then take a break for a little while. And I'm still waiting for, you know, Beware the Bat to come back from its break, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. And because I don't know what's going on with Katana. But anyway, it just went away, and finally I looked it up and found out that it was online, and I just haven't had time to watch it online. And I was walking through a store and saw that they had it out, and it's like $15 for the DVD, and you pay a couple more for the Blu-ray. It's really reasonably priced, and you get the whole season. Boom, you're done. And this was a great season. It was following all the stuff that happened with the spirits in book two, and now the spirits are back in the regular world and causing all kinds of problems. And the Tenzin and his family are no longer the last airbenders. There's now new people are emerging who have the power of airbending. And so it was it seemed like a great season. And so when I saw that it was out in DVD and Blu-ray, I went ahead and picked it up.
Cool. Yeah, Nickelodeon really mishandled that, and I think IO9 or Tor has had a couple of posts about Nickelodeon and their programming lately, and about how they're really messed up over there. Because I mean, just to take a show off the air mid-season for no real apparent reason,
and then throw it
online.
They also identified that Korra was skewing to an older demographic. You know, old farts like me.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And so that's not their core demographic. So they said, well, if those people want to watch it, we're just going to put it online.
Well, I can tell you, I watched season one on Amazon Prime on the video there.
And this one's also available there. Season three is now available there as well.
Season three? Do you have to buy it individually? Or do you, sorry about that.
That's okay.
This is when we live podcast from my bedroom. And...
Yeah, I did not... I have never seen Korra.
Any of them?
Any of them. I have. I had this same thing with the Hunger Games, where I didn't see the sequels because the first one ended on such a perfect note. Like, I don't want to disrupt that.
Sure.
And Avatar, The Last Airbender, to me, is possibly the story, the only story out there that gets as close to perfection as possible. Because when I think of things I disliked about Avatar, like, I can only think of very tiny, niggling little things that don't even compare to the greater scope. And
sure.
So when Korra came out, I thought, oh, well, that's cool, you know, a continuation of Avatar. And then, you know, mixed reviews were getting in. I'm like, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not going to say the world doesn't need more Avatar The Last Airbender, but I was going to say, like, I don't want Avatar The Last Airbender, like, tweaked for me.
Sure.
This, like, you know, when the live action movie came out, I changed the channel anytime
yeah.
I came on. I changed the subject anytime someone tried to bring it up.
Yeah.
I avoided it entirely.
It was a horrible movie. It really
was.
Oh,
yeah. No, I knew it was going to be horrible, and I knew it was never going to be even remotely as good
sure.
as the show. So this is the first time I've acknowledged it as existing, and when I'm done finishing this sentence, I will go back to not acknowledging it.
Understood. Well, you know, I thought it was a clever attempt because, as far as Korra is concerned, because you have The Last Avatar, and those kids are of a certain age, right?
Yeah.
Aang and all those kids. Korra and her group are older by several years.
Okay.
And so, and it actually takes place after Aang is gone. You know, Aang has done all of his work and everything, and it's his legacy, kind of, right?
Right.
And then Korra is chosen as the next Avatar. But when we see her story, she's much older. So from my point of view, it was almost like they were clever in that the kids who watched The Last Avatar with Aang were of a certain age, and now they're all older.
Yeah.
So I thought it was almost like a Harry Potter thing, like the kids were growing
yeah,
up
yeah,
with the story.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
And so I liked that aspect of it, but I find it interesting that at least the people that I know, my friends who have kids who watched the first one, don't really watch The Last Airbender or the Korra one. But
really?
The boys. Now, the girls all do because now they have an avatar that's a girl and they're all very excited about that. And so they're watching it. But, like, I remember walking into my friend Quinn's house and his son, this is how I came to know about The Last Airbender. I walk in and his son runs up, stomps the ground and pushes, like, on the air at me. And I'm just standing there and I go, okay, what just happened? And he says, oh, he's an earthbender. I said, what's an earthbender? That kid does not watch Korra.
Yeah.
It never appealed to him, which I just find I'm actually depressed about that a little bit because I thought it's a great show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm about to launch into season two on that because now that that's for free up on Amazon, I'm gonna get into that.
You do have to buy the third one on Amazon, John.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. I know two just went up, and that you can stream for free now if you have Amazon Prime, and three you have to buy.
Because Nickelodeon made the big move to Amazon away from Netflix like a year and a half, 2 years
yeah.
ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Yep, definitely. All right, my pick, I don't think I picked this yet, even though I finished reading it a while ago. This is a book that it seems like just about everybody in our in the sort of science fiction and fantasy community has read and typically raves about, and I finally read it, and that is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. I loved it. Everyone I know that read it loved it. The thing that I'm sort of curious about with Ready Player One and the audiences who loved it, there's so many references to sort of 80s pop culture, video games and movies and everything else. So I kind of, now, you know, I'll ask Sam, did you read Ready Player One?
No. And, you know, all respect to Ernest Cline, I actually avoided it for the exact same reasons you are mentioning. in that every review I heard about only mentioned the references. I still have no idea what that book is about. but I know it references a lot of video games. And, you know, for some reason that just struck me as extremely cynical, like a lot of nerd baiting.
Yeah. Well, like, that's why I wanted to ask, because you're still in your 20s, right, Sam?
No, I just turned 30.
You just turned 30.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Sam. No, because I'm 10 years older than you, and it's perfect for me, and probably you go a couple years either way, it's good too. But I imagine even 10 years younger than me, those references aren't going to really mean much to you, and I wonder if – I don't know if the book – I loved it anyway, and it's hard because I think reading is a personal experience, and I think it's a well-crafted story and all that, but – I have to admit, a lot of the enjoyment I got out of it was like, oh, he just referenced Yar's Revenge on Atari 26, or, you know, whatever, like some obscure reference. And it was like, there's a lot of like, cool, you know, and then I enjoyed it. But if those references mean, like, he has a whole thing where he talks a lot about Rush, the band Rush, and I'm a huge Rush fan. And he goes, there's a pretty significant part of the book that's about that. And of course, I loved that. But if you don't like Rush, like, does that part hold up? Maybe not.
Well, you know, it's not even necessarily the references. It's the fact that the references play such a big part. It's like Family Guy. Family Guy does not really tell jokes. Mm-hmm. It references things, and then, you know, your enjoyment comes from recognizing those references. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very difficult reader. Like, I want to be emotionally manipulated. But I don't want to be aware of it.
Well, okay. And that leads me to a question, because you just said that you're not necessarily into all the fantasy that's coming out right now. So how does Sam decide what to read?
You know, mostly by that I'll read just about anything, but whether it's a success for me is basically, you know, that. Being emotionally manipulated without being aware of it. Like, that's something huge to me. The reason I liked Brian Stavely's book so much is because as I was going through them, I remember I put down Emperor's Blades because one of the characters was going through a really rough patch, and that really upset me. And then I realized, oh, holy crap, I'm actually upset about something mm-hmm. that's happening in a book.
Sure.
And like, I want that character to pull through. I was really pissed off that she was having a hard time. And I'm like, well, that is actually, when was the last time that happened to me? So, you know, I like it when I have that, and, you know, Emperor's Blades, it was just very fun. You know, I liked that feeling of having fun. Whereas a lot of, you know, the big fantasies that come out, I'll read it, and within 100 pages or so, I'll realize what they're doing, and I'll read a scene, and all I can see is, you know, the author writing in big text, feel emotions here. And I'll be like, no, I'm not into it anymore, because now you're trying to make me feel something.
And do you try to put it in your own writing? Are you trying to emotionally manipulate people?
Oh, obviously, yeah. But... And, you know, I actually get criticized about this a lot because some people don't understand that I'm trying to be very coy about it. And they'll say, like, they'll criticize my characters for not acting rationally or logical. sorry about that.
That's okay.
That's okay. Hey, we got dogs, we got kids, we got phones. It's fine.
people will accuse me of accuse my characters of not being rational, and I'm like, well, yeah, I can't come out and say and just have these characters say, like, I'm fighting this guy because I'm feeling insecure about myself. That would defeat the whole point of writing a book.
Sure.
But, you know, I feel that there is a very large contingent of readers out there who feel very gratified when, and, you know, there is a certain I want to say satisfaction of just having everything add up, like not like being able to put down a book when you finished it and think, you know, everything in that book just fit perfectly. Mm-hmm. Well, and everything made sense.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned the emotional manipulation. I recently got to talk with Tad Williams and Kate Elliott.
Oh.
And I pointed out that they have both written books that I very vividly remember stopping, throwing the book down, and just shouting at the characters for making really stupid goddamn decisions. It's like, no, why are you doing this? Why? This is because it's like you expect the hero's journey kind of thing, right? And then as you're going along, all of a sudden the hero takes a far left turn and you're going, wait a minute, what are you doing? Why are you, what? No, what are you doing? That's stupid. That's going to get you hurt. Why are you doing? And I had the opportunity to tell them both that, and they both just kind of laughed and said, good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, someone who understood this very well is George R. R. Martin, mm-hmm. and I hate bringing it up because literally everything gets compared to Game of Thrones. Like, every arc I get says, oh, if you like Game of Thrones, right. You like the story about a magic beagle or something.
a magic beagle and his little yellow bird friend and flying around on a doghouse. Yeah, I saw that.
Peanuts Game of Thrones would be pretty great. someone do fan art of that. But you know, George had this great, and you know, this is probably the first time I had seen that, because up until then I had been reading like Dragonlance and Driz novels and characters that acted very rationally, and because they were not necessarily playing out motives, they were adhering to an alignment, because you know they were D&D novels. But you know, this is what I say when people criticize characters for acting irrationally. I say if Ned Stark had been intelligent, Game of Thrones would be much shorter.
Right, he never would have went.
And not nearly as interesting. You know, at some point, you know, Cersei could have come up and said, hey, man, listen, I'm way smarter than you. I've got this entire court playing in my hand. I'm going to mess you up if you don't fall in line. And, you know, the smart man would have looked at that and been like, well, you know what? She's actually really, does have this a lot. I probably should back off. And then he could have lived a very nice, happy life up in the north. But, you know, because he has that code of honor, he said, like, no, I can't. I can't let you do this.
Well, he could have lived a little longer in the north.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, sir, that it would have been...
Happy life might be stretching it, considering the George book, but...
Yeah, and considering what was coming.
I am finally getting around to reading Dance of Dragons, and I'm about 30% into it, and because I've read all the books, and then... But it was a while ago. I read Feast of Crows when it came out, you know, so that's a while ago now. And it's been a while since I read the books. I watched the first three seasons of the TV show and liked it very much, and was like, all right, I was going to go to season four, but then I was like, you know what? I think now they start getting stuff from Dance of Dragons, like little bits here and there. That's what I heard. So I'm like, let me finally get around to reading the book here. And so I read a bunch of the synopsis online for the first, because I'm like, I don't remember what happened with all this stuff. And it's kind of like what you said. You're like, wait a minute, they did this? That's why would... Because my impression of the characters are where they're at the end of season three of the show.
Right.
And where they get by the time they start Dance of Dragons, it's like, oh yeah, all that happened? That's weird. Like, why would they do that? But it's you're right, because it's... Human beings don't always make rational... It's very often they don't make rational choices.
Yeah,
so.
The vast majority of the time they don't make rational decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, put in situations of high stress,
mm-hmm.
you know, they make rational decisions even less.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, what it comes down to is a rational character would be incredibly boring.
Yeah.
Like the you know, that was, to go even further back, that was the whole point of Tolkien's, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings series, is that it would actually be very safe to stay back in the Shire and not do anything, you know? Mm-hmm. When all the dwarves came, Bilbo should have just gone, well, that sounds dangerous. I don't think I'd like to go.
Which doesn't make for a good story, right?
Right, which wouldn't, you know, at the end of the day, that's the thrust of it. You got to tell a story. A conflict needs to happen. And mm-hmm. sometimes you can't do the rational thing.
I just heard an interview with a guy who wrote a book about Tolkien and Lewis and their friendship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said that Tolkien was never necessarily aware of how popular The Hobbit had become.
Yeah.
And his publisher came to him and said, hey, you know, this Hobbit book is really, it's doing quite well. We'd love to have a second Hobbit book that can come out next Christmas. Do you think you could manage that? And he's like, oh, absolutely. I could certainly write you another Hobbit book by next Christmas, which would have been 38.
Right.
And then, you know, the next book didn't come out until the 50s, I think, was Lord of the Rings. So the Lord of the Rings books, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I Sam was talking about, you know, rational characters and talk about stresses. My wife is a psychologist, and she writes behavior plans for different people on, a lot of people on the autism spectrum. And, you know, we talk a lot about, because our son is autistic, and I work with autistic kids in my school, and we talk a lot about stressors, like this thing where, it does, you can be as rational as you want. And it's something that I think about a lot, and I consider myself pretty rational. But when you have a stressor, you could be very aware and outside of yourself and be like, all right, this is a stressor. This is happening. I'm aware of it. I'm going to do my best to kind of just maintain. But eventually you have a point where it goes past and it's hard to control how you act, and you may raise your voice or you may yell or you may, you know, be nasty. And it's not rational, because what I've noticed with myself just, being a dad and being a teacher is, I know if I lose my cool or lose my temper, it makes things 10 times worse, because all of a sudden, especially someone that's autistic is, you know, they can't, depending on where they are, they can't really process that. They just, now they got a reaction, and now it's like, whoa, now things are 10 times worse. So I know rationally I have to like not react, and I've gotten much better at it, but you know, every once in a while, And that's what characters do.
Yeah, and you know, like you have two options there. Like, you find a way to cope with the stress or escape it.
Mm-hmm.
The longer you cope with the stress, the more that becomes your long-term strategy for coping. So, you know, this is why people sometimes become emotionally numb or, you know, become extremely aggressive, because that's their way to reacting to stress.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes perfect sense for people in fantasy books who are constantly in fights or at the center of political intrigue or otherwise have a lot of people who want to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And but cool. Well, you know, we do have to wrap it up. So once again, Sam's website is just samsykes, S-Y-K-E-S. .com, and on Twitter you can follow him at Sam Sykes Swears. And the new book, once again, is The City Stained Red, and that's out through Orbit right now. And if you follow Sam on Twitter, he will tell you about nightmares that you can avoid if you buy his book. So
My website is filled with excerpts and comics, so if you're at all interested in the book, just go to my website and there is tons of free content there to hopefully help you decide whether you want to get it or not.
And Sam, is there going to be a graphic novel version of the comic?
There might. We did a small comic to sort of bridge the gap between two trilogies. You can definitely start on The City Stained Red and miss nothing, but it's also there as an introduction. And I would love to do a graphic novel. This was my first opportunity writing a comic, and I had an absolute blast. And I worked with the artist Ashley Cope, who does Unsounded, which is an amazing webcomic. But I would absolutely love to do a graphic novel version.
Well, if that happens, keep me in mind, because obviously I do the graphic novel blog on Kirkus Reviews.
Absolutely.
Sweet, sweet. So Sam, any con appearances coming up that people should know about?
I'm being very coy about my cons. The only thing that I would really like people to come see me at is Phoenix Comic Con in 2015, which is in May. So it's a ways off, but that is my home con. It is, and you know, in my unbiased opinion, the best con. because it has such an amazing author track. And last year we had something like 30 authors, and it was just a complete blast.
And yeah, they get a big author, sci-fi fantasy author.
Lee Whiteside does an amazing job of creating really compelling programming and bringing out some really great authors. And you know, this year is going to be even better.
Cool. Very good. All right. For us, we should also mention that, speaking of cons, Patrick and I are going to be, we are the media guests of honor this year at Capricorn. That is in the greater Chicago area. So if you are in that area or are interested in such things, please come and check us out there. Matt Forbeck is the author guest of honor. Steven Jackson of Steven Jackson Games is going to be there, and lots of other cool folks. So come on out to Capricorn. That is in February. That is, I believe it is like the second or third weekend in February. So that's us there. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Over at Kirkus, I have a review of Rocket Girl Volume 1, Times Squared, which is a fun little graphic novel that came out, and it's about a 15-year-old time or a 15-year-old teen detective with the New York Police Department in 2013 who travels back to 1986 to fix the timeline because an evil corporation has been changing the timeline to pad their bottom line. So it's cool. It's an interesting book. It's a great book. I'm loving it, and I've got that over there at Kirkus. SF Signal, we've got our yearly roundup posts going on the podcast, so go check that out. And usual stuff, John. ATFMB on Twitter, ATFMB on Facebook.
Cool. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. It doesn't show signs of stopping, but I brought some corn for popping. Just let it snow. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. Just let it snow. Oh, oh, oh.
When we finally night, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.